You got two draft pick or three draft picks on this team. They should be 4-0. Just saying.
I mean, yeah, like the talent disparity in the G League, it feels like between what the Ignite have and what the Spurs have. I mean, obviously, I haven't watched a lot of Delaware, but
yeah,
if they weren't winning, I would be really concerned.
Yeah, I mean, we would be talking. The conversation would be different. If Luka wasn't averaging a double double, then we would be talking about him potentially busting right now.
Yeah, I think my biggest issue so far is the Trey Jones. Should Trey Jones be called up stuff? And I'm like, okay, so no. whose minutes are you gonna take away to put Trey Jones to sit on the San Antonio bench?
Right. The timing of the end of the G League is interesting too, because what's the trade deadline?
March?
Yeah.
I think end of March.
And when does the season end for the G League? The end of March?
Yeah.
So, if there was a time to start moving guards off the San Antonio team to make room for Trey, then he would be able to roll right up into San Antonio and step into somebody's shoes. If you move Patty, or if you were to move somebody like Alani or DeJounte.
I think that's got to be the part that's like Spurs fans probably hate the most right now, is that the team is winning. You can't really tank and trade some of the guys that are underperforming. I mean, besides Aldridge, you could probably still move him.
Right, but he's an old piece, and what do you try to move him for?
Exactly.
You know, that's that big question. And there's a lot of people with the DeMar thing. DeMar is having a fantastic time.
But trade him to give Lonnie Walker more touches.
Right. I'm really hoping we can sign DeMar again. I think he wants to stay. That might be a fan side of me with that one, but I think he wants to stay.
I think he's going to get paid the same anywhere else either.
Yeah, very true. And then plus, why would you want to just start all over again? Like, if this team makes the playoffs, what's the incentive to leave?
Exactly. And I think that the biggest factor contributing to him wanting to stay, in my opinion, is Keldon Johnson.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
Those two are brothers.
That mental role. Yeah.
Yeah. It's him and Kyle Lowry all over again, and you can finally see DeMar out there having fun.
Yep.
And he's a big mental guy. Big mental guy.
Also, speaking of trade rumors, I know we've all saw the Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond stuff, but did y'all know Blake Griffin doesn't have a single dunk this year?
What?
That stat blew my mind when I saw it the other day. He hasn't dunked the ball once this year.
That's insane. It seems like a player meant to dunk. You know what's crazy? There, I was in my fantasy league and I saw that he was fridged, and I was like, "What? This guy's a fridge? Let me go claim him real quick." And then I've been looking.
Oh, that's why.
I'm just like, okay, let me go drop him real quick.
Everyone, welcome to episode 8 of the Forever Toros podcast. I'm your host, John Diaz, joined by Michael DeLeon and Jonas Clark, as always. And I think we just have to talk about the first week in the Gubble. Obviously, the Austin Spurs, we're recording this on Tuesday, the 16th. Side note, hope everyone is staying warm if you can, staying safe. Kind of crazy times going on right now, crazy week. And obviously, our thoughts are with all of you. If you're listening to this, we really appreciate that. We know that there's probably more important things going on in your life right now. I've suffered power issues. Luckily, Jonas and Mike haven't, so we've been able to record this. And my power's been back on, so we've been able to get this going. But hopefully, if you're listening, stay safe, stay strong, stay positive. Or like Rick Renner says at the end of Spurs game, stay positive, test negative. we're going to try to have a little bit of fun here, because obviously Austin, some light at the end of the tunnel right now for just life in general, because even San Antonio has now had their games postponed because of COVID. So we've got a 4-0 Austin Spurs team. Yay, guys. Right?
Yeah.
Wow. I know it's morning, but guys, energy.
Hey, I'll take it because, man, apparently I didn't even know this until Paul Garcia texted me this morning. He's like, I'm ready to go to peace on three games and plus one. And I said, three? I knew of one, but now there's
three. Yeah.
So we'll take this double basketball right now. I'm definitely up for it because yesterday's game was a lot of fun to watch, and so I'm ready for more.
Yeah, yesterday's comeback was really impressive, honestly. And so Austin is 4-0 through their first four games. They won against the Memphis Hustle 119-111, came back the next day, beat the Lakeland Magic 104-102. They've defeated the Erie Bayhawks 115-108, and then yesterday's comeback win against the Fort Wayne Mad Ants 116-111. So through four games, Lukas Šamanić is your scoring and rebounding leader for Austin. He's got 21.3 points, 11.8 rebounds. The bad numbers are two assists and four turnovers per game. He's shooting 47% from the field and only 31% from three. On the floor, he's got an offensive rating of a 111.7, a defensive rating of 98.6 with a net rating of 13. And that's pretty similar to Trey Jones's offensive and defensive rating. On the Trey Jones side, he's Austin's assist leader with almost 21 points per game, 5 rebounds, 10.5 assists, and 2.8 turnovers, which is absolutely absurd. Absolutely. And he's shooting 44% from the field, hasn't made a three-pointer, not his game, obviously. My favorite stat about this whole thing, and I'm sorry to pull off my Paul Garcia impression here with all the analytical stats. I know that's his game, not mine. I'm not trying to infringe on his turf. But Trey Jones has a 3.82 assist-to-turnover ratio. Here's some NBA guards who have a assist-to-turnover ratio better than that. Devontae Graham of the Charlotte Hornets, CJ McCollum, our very own DeMar DeRozan and Derek White, and Trey's brother Tyus Jones. So there you go. It runs in the family, apparently, to just be an all-around floor general and be able to pass the ball really well.
That's awesome.
And then lastly, I guess we can crown him the Forever Toros MVP, is Robert Woodard II. He's at a 19.3 points, 10.3 rebounds, 40% from three on just 2.5 attempts, 51% from the field. Only a net rating of 3.2. The defense is a little bit worse when he's on, and so is the offense, but I think one of my favorite things that I saw from him is is a really old piece, but he says he's a different person on the court and he's relentless. And we saw that yesterday with that comeback win.
Yes.
That man just has an endless motor and it's really fun to watch. So those are the three main standouts, but I want to turn to you guys. Jonas, especially you, what have you enjoyed? Who's your favorite thing that you've seen so far? And who are your standout players for Austin besides the three that I've mentioned, if you have any other three?
Yeah, so it's really easy to fall in love with the three contract guys. Those are, you know, Trey Jones, Robert Woodard II, and Lukas Šamanić, who are all three NBA contracts. Not even two-way contract guys, but NBA contracts and first and second round draft picks in their own right. But my standout guy, and I said this the other day on Twitter too, I think, but of all the non-contract guys, Nate Renfro. I mean, he is everywhere.
Everywhere. I love Nate so much.
Offensively and defensively. Now, he doesn't have the putback game. There was a stat missing there from your Robert Woodard stats, John, and that is that he also kills two rims per game. I don't know if the G League tracks that stat. But
they needed to yesterday
because the mortality rate for those rims is pretty high so far when he's on the court. But Nate Renfro also brings that energy at both ends of the floor. I use this all the time. I love blocks over dunks. Like if you're 6 foot six plus, a dunk isn't that impressive unless you're going over somebody. And we've seen some of that here so far in the gubble. But a block, just the timing, the counter that the action of a block is, somebody's going to throw it down, you're blocking their shot. Nate Renfro leads the gubble with 3.5 blocks per game.
Just absurd.
Just phenomenal. And then you look at what he does elsewhere, too. He's pulling down 6.3 boards per game. And what stands out to me there is that two of those are offensive rebounds, not just defensive. Like, Luka's averaging a double-double on the glass, but 10 of his rebounds are coming at the defensive end of the floor. He's not really active around the rim in terms of, you know, remaining active through the play offensively. And that's, it's, again, a strong point to Robert Woodard as well. But Renfro then yesterday blows my mind and nails a three-point shot too. And I was like, what can this guy not do? So standout performer, Nate Renfro. I want to give an honorable mention to Khyri Thomas, who is currently out with a hamstring injury. But what he's been able to do in three-point production for this team, for a team that's struggling, quite frankly, from beyond the arc. Going into yesterday, they were shooting somewhere in the ballpark of 28%. it might have been lower than that even. But those two guys really standing out. And I'm happy to see what Coach Nielsen is doing with his stars, but also just G League guys.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that. Austin is shooting 28% from three on 30 attempts, which is insane that they're 4-0, because usually, you know, the G League has, it's either teams full of slashers and dunkers or teams full of three-point shooters. And Austin seems like the slashing team that has just enough three-point shooting to survive and make a couple runs here and there.
Yeah.
Mike, what are your thoughts so far through the first four games?
Well, I mean, I'm going to kind of like touch off of something Jonas said, and that's, you know, Coach, the job he's done so far. This is a deep team, and he's been able to get everyone involved, and everybody get some minutes, and they've all kind of shined at different points. Again, I became a big Nate Renfro friend just yesterday. This 3.5 box game, this guy is 6'8". He's not like some 6'10", 6'11". Classic rim protector. He's like 205 pounds. He's able to move the ball around a bit too, which is great for someone at his position. And Brian Wright, you need to figure out a way to go get Rob Woodard, man. That just needs to happen.
Yeah, already. I think all of Spurs Twitter is all on that train now too.
I know. I think Jonas and I were talking about it in Slack yesterday, and I was just like, look, I like Kundera a lot, but at this point, playing the guard position with so much guard talent and young guard talent, it's going to be hard for him to find minutes. So maybe you do something like that. But I mean, he's just, regardless of what the numbers say, when he's out there, he's just playing, you know, all out and so much energy and hustle, and you'd really love to see that. I like his game a lot. He's shown a lot. Luka is somehow Mr. Fourth Quarter all of a sudden. Captain late the second now, because he's starting to come out and do those things, and he'll have different parts in the game, and I'm just like, oh no, or like facepalm, like sending the softest screens ever, but then he just takes over and starts playing bully ball all of a sudden. I'm just like, where did this come from? Where did a bully ball Luka come from? Because he's trying to just take it inside, and I don't know what else I can say about Trey Jones. Trey Jones may be the best ball distributor that either Spurs team has at this point. He's just solid with the ball in his hands, and he's kind of a guy it seems like you can just trust to make the right decisions. And I like seeing where he just had like a glimmer of daylight and he would attack it and use that like change of speed to get to the basket, but yet he's still going to look for the right pass to make. And I think that's a player that Pop's going to love coaching over the next however many years.
Yeah, Trey, I can't remember the last time I've seen the Spurs, either G League or the NBA, have a point guard that was so patient at the point of attack, constantly looking around him, not worried about where the ball is, just looking at where defenders are and where the teammates are, and attacking, just constantly putting you on your heels and putting stress on the defense. It's, you know, I know we've talked about his defense and coming out of college that, you know, they said the Spurs probably had two of the best five defenders in the whole draft. But what he's been able to do as a distributor is absolutely insane. I think the only weakness in his game really right now for the level that he's at is his shooting, because he hasn't made a shot outside of the paint. He has just nothing but floaters and drives that are all within the paint. And he's literally hasn't made a single shot outside of like a free throw line. So that's definitely something that I think we have to look for and where he has to develop. And I can't say that there's a lot of development there, because obviously Tyus Jones isn't the greatest three-point shooter either, but he's a very good distributor and defender, and that'll get you pretty far in the NBA alone. There's guys like TJ McConnell, you know, are out there that are just strictly distributors like that. Jonas, what were you going to say?
It makes me wonder, though, does Trey really need to develop that three-point shot? Because you look at the way that the San Antonio roster's constructed, and you've got enough shooters around him. Derek White's really picking up his three-point production. Yep. Luka Šamanić, when he makes that, when he also graduates to San Antonio, he's a three-point shooter. Trey Lyles, three-point shooter. DeJounte Murray coming on as a three-point shooter. Even DeMar DeRozan picking himself up as a three-point shooter. So he's going to have these guys around him. I would rather him have that floor general, because you've got all this talent, and there, and I think that DeJounte's strength is going to be off the ball once you can take, you know, remove him from being point guard, which we're already starting to see with Derek White
yep.
taking over one duties. And so keeping Trey as just a pure floor general, which he said in media sessions after the games, he said that's his goal. He knows he can score when he wants to score, but his goal on both ends of the floor is to lead the pace defensively and offensively and be a floor general. And you look at where he came from in school. He played at Duke, and he didn't just play at Duke with any team. He played on that Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish Duke team.
Yeah.
which Coach K then said, you know, he was a blessing. Just as a true freshman, he was part of that freshman class on that team too, and he was just the one distributing it to everybody. And so you talk about you know, big personalities. Those are all top, you know, those three were top 10 picks in their class, and being able to just find the hot hand and dish it to your scorers first and still know you can get yours. I mean, that's what I think this guard heavy team of the Spurs is going to need in the future, more than his 3-point production.
Yeah, I will say I would love to see, obviously, once he earns the playing time, I would really love to see what he could do with that bench unit in San Antonio. Because especially if you start DJ and Derek, like, Lonnie could need someone to get him the ball. I know Lonnie, we've talked about him before, being someone that really thrives being a ball handler and attacking on his own. But I would just love to see the two of them back in the backcourt together and see what they could do. And, I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll actually get that chance either next season or later this season. Something I want to touch on. Man, Luka, I really struggle with his finishing game, because it feels like he only has two gears. It's either to just completely body you and lower his shoulder into you, or he kind of panics and tries to do a little bit too much off the dribble and pulls up a little bit shorter than he should, and it always leads to a bad shot. It either leads to a foul or a bad shot. And it's getting to the point where we've had multiple announcing crews through the four games, and they all notice the same thing, that Luka's borderline offensive fouling, or he's just not attacking strong enough. What are y'all's thoughts on that so far?
I mean, I think it's going to be called in the NBA, and not only that, but he's going to have a hard time. I mean, look, I like that he's actually trying to attack and things like that, but there's a big difference between the opposition he's facing in the bubble right now and NBA competition on a nightly basis. They're a lot stronger, a lot bigger players, and he's not going to be able to body these types of players. And so if he tries to hook too much, or if he tries to really, like, you know, push it off like that, he's definitely going to get called. And that's part of, I think, it's just going to be part of his growing process. He's going to have to learn how to use his offense inside a little bit more. And he shows a little bit of that, but he can't. He's become almost too dependent on this, like, the back down thing and figuring he's going to get the benefit of the doubt on those calls. But it's going to be much harder.
Jonas, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Luka's body game is something that I even at this point, of borderline drawing fouls every time, I need to see that from this kid. Because there was, you know, all this last offseason, questioning how much was he really into it. Can he? And one of the things coming out of Croatia that we all recognized too was he was tall and lanky. He needed to learn how to have size, and he needed to learn how to play with his size. Last year, you look at the Austin Spurs games, And his touch around the rim was just off, kind of like what you're saying. But he wasn't getting it to drop even mildly consistently, and he wasn't backing anybody down last year. So I think that this is coming. This is part of that coaching experience from Coach Nielsen. You know, he was a power forward center himself, playing in Australia, a championship caliber, played on the national team for Australia, and I think that first you get him just to do the action of using his size. Then you can refine the action. But first, you have to teach him how to do it. And yeah. So I love seeing him do that. Same thing with some of his more outside ball handling where it looks awkward or he's pulling up short because he just kind of maybe loses the handle or whatever it is. I still need to see him taking that because we talked about this, you know, back when we got ready for this gubble and what this was going to look like is that I need to see him running the offense because this is the big raw potential talent in the Spurs organization. Again, Keldon Johnson, we kind of knew what we were getting for him coming out of Kentucky. But Croatia, with Luka coming out of Croatia, it was a little bit, you know, just 6'10", 6'11". He's kind of still growing there. Hadn't fully formed into his body yet. But when you see the handles and you see the outside shooting, you see, and one of the announcers I think went too far in terms of they dropped a Dirk bomb and talking about Luka, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. But I think that that's kind of like the absolute ceiling that you could ever hope to get out of Luka. But if you can see some of those elements in his game, that's what I want to see, and I think that you start teaching him how to bully people down here at this level. He's going to add size, but you've got to create the habits. You've got to create the behavior first, and then you can refine that behavior. I'm all for it.
Yeah, it's definitely something I would really like to see, you know, him just cut down on the turnovers. I think he just kind of loses exactly where the defender is and where the ball is, especially when he's trying to pass out, you know, either from the top of the key or in the post. It's just kind of the awareness isn't exactly there yet, but that's just something that takes more time and takes more reps. So hopefully it's something he can improve on because it just that fourth quarter yesterday he had a good game and a bad game, but that fourth quarter was just Luka at the height of his powers. And that's scary, man, especially when he started smiling and having fun. It was just like, oh, crap. Like, there's something there. That kid is a killer when he wants to be. And you can tell that there's definitely a bright future if the Spurs can really unlock everything.
Right. And Coach Nielsen both said it's just a matter of him letting the game come to him. You know, he was trying to force things in the first half. If he can, like you said, he's feeling the flow. He's smiling. Dangerous.
Yep. And so we forgot to touch on two things real quick. And if you guys have any notes on this, please chime in. Austin did acquire two people that weren't with the team when the gubble started. They acquired Malik Pope, who spent last year playing for the Rostock Seawolves in the German league, averaged 7.9 points, 4.4 rebounds, 1.2 assists, and a steal in 21 minutes. Previously to that, he played for the Greensboro Swarm. Out of San Diego State, I know Spurs fans probably don't want to hear that part. And in the related move was waiving David Kramer. Any of y'all have any thoughts on Malik Pope? I haven't looked too much into him. I got to be honest.
No initial thoughts on Malik Pope, but Kramer was an injury situation. I actually asked Coach Nielsen about this yesterday in terms of what, because the acquisition of Jalen Morris did not come with a waiver, right? Yeah. And so if we can look at anything, Pope coming in as a forward, I think that that's more insurance than anything behind Renfro, behind Woodard, and behind Samanich. But when you look at, and I'm sure we'll get to him here in a second with Morris, that's more guard help. That's more outside shooting. He's shooting 87% on the season from deep. Granted, it's just been four games now, but on a team that's shooting poor from outside, I think that that's where it's just the Pope signing is more about depth than anything.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on Jalen Morris because this is one of my favorite G League stories in a very long time. So for a background for people who haven't heard or don't know, Jalen Morris literally went and played for his dad at Division II Molloy College in New York and had to try out and send tape to get on the team with his dad as an assistant coach. His dad literally told him, "You're not coming here and playing just because you're my son." That's how he starts off his basketball career after high school. Then he goes and does he pays the $150 to do a tryout with the Long Island Nets. Doesn't get picked up. Then gets drafted in the second round by the Erie BayHawks of the G League. Gets called up. Here's where the familiarity with the Spurs comes in. He played under Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta, got called up, and then also played under him in Milwaukee as a two-way before being released. Jalen Morris, here's the thing. It's another 6'5 guard that the Spurs have. He's only a career, 32% three-point shooter in the G League. Right. But he's 8 of 9 so far in the bubble. And the only reason he's even on the Spurs roster is because Iowa had a COVID issue with guys that broke protocol, so they needed the extra bodies. And then once those extra bodies were cleared, they waived them, and the Spurs just picked them up. So I don't even know what to think. This guy's just had an amazing it's very reminiscent of Derek White at a G League level, with his story of coming through D2 and then just the G League tryout and everything. So, Mike, what are your thoughts so far on Jalen Morris, even though he's only played one game for Austin?
It's one of those things also, because I think you're also always looking out for that, like, next G League story ever since Jonathan Simmons. And sometimes I feel like they try to force feed it down with everybody, but there's a guy that it's been beyond just one workout. Or, he's kind of had to earn everything that he's gotten so far, and so I like that. I like what I've seen from him in a short time, and it kind of makes sense that he probably came highly recommended from Coach Budenholzer. It just kind of reminds me a lot of back in the day when Pop had to cut Rajah Bell, and he told Larry Brown, "Hey, this kid can play." They signed him, and then he became Public Enemy number one. But still, it's been very short sample size, but I like what I'm seeing so far, and I hope he does well, because that's kind of one of those stories you just want to see guys like that do well.
Always, Jonas.
Yeah, I mean, that's the great part about this level of basketball, right? Is everybody's fighting for their next opportunity. Even draft picks, some of them are fighting just to stay relevant within their organization. And of course, this is a little bit of a different year than most, but Jalen Morris, you can't help but pull for the guy. And I was kind of shocked to see him. The announcement came down that he was signed on Sunday, and then boom, he gets thrown into the game yesterday, and came out and did what he was brought in to do. Again, in my opinion, he was brought in for outside shooting. You mentioned he's only a 32% career guy, but for whatever reason, he's found his stroke right now.
Yep.
And with Kyrie Thomas being out with a hamstring injury yesterday, the timing just kind of fit. And so I like seeing him out there. And this is something that we mentioned before. The team is shooting really poor from outside. They need all the help they can possibly get should they find themselves in a back-and-forth shooting battle. And Jalen Morris just kind of fits that bill. Happy to have that kind of story here with the Spurs. It almost reminds me, too, of that who was it? Andre Ingram with the Lakers. I mean, that's obviously a career that spanned a lot longer than Jalen Morris is so far, and how long he just stuck around in the G League or the D League at the time. But it kind of has the making of that, and just a feel good story. That's what this level of basketball I think is great for as well.
Yeah, if he's going to end up being the story of the Gubble, obviously we're a big fan of that. We're always going to be rooting for those kind of stories. I think that's the best part about the G League, and you kind of get that emotional attachment to these guys because you see what they've been through. It's not always struggle and strife. There's just things like, hey, he had to earn that. His own dad tells him, "You're not going to just come play for me just because you're my son." Like, I love that part so much, because my dad would have told me the exact same thing, and I know we can all relate to that. I think lastly, let's end on a fun subject. Obviously, shorter episode. Austin plays again today against the Canton Charge, so we don't want to go too long. But we have Austin Spurs Fiesta jerseys.
Yeah!
I'm glad you feel that way about them, because I'm not a... They're not great to me. I'll be honest. I'm sorry if Spurs fans love them. I'm not that impressed. So I'll just leave. I'll leave my take to that. I don't want to piss people off.
Oh no, piss the people off, John. What is it that you don't like about the Austin Spurs having their own rendition of the Fiesta jerseys that it only took San Antonio 16 years to get?
Yeah, you know, it only took San Antonio that long to do theirs, and then Austin gets theirs in like 5 minutes. I think that's crap. But anyway, I also don't like that they're the whole front of the jersey says HEB Austin Frost. Like, the corporate sponsorship is driving me crazy and ruining that uniform to just have this billboard on Lukas Šamanić's chest. And tell me, let's be honest. I'm sorry, Austinites, if I offend you, but what the hell is Fiesta about your city?
The Spurs.
Agreed.
They're okay. You know what? I'm going to say something I'm going to regret, so I'm just going to stop there. Mike, what are your thoughts?
I guess they can't put bad tacos on the jersey, right? So,
it's
like,
oh!
Damn! So, I mean, what else can they do? I guess they have to steal. They have to, like, swack the whole Spurs, San Antonio's thing. But, I mean, I'm with you on the... It doesn't exactly feel like the identity, aside from the fact that they're the affiliate. But, I mean, I think the whole corporate logo thing is getting kind of... I'm just like, okay, when it was one, it was okay. And the way that the Spurs and the NBA have done it and having that small patch, I think, has been good. Like, I remember seeing HGB on the, like, WNBA or, like, the Silver Stars at the time. There's, and it's, like, huge at the bottom. And I was starting to see it, like, StockX on the G League Ignite. And, you know, you think that's a StockX team because that's bigger than anything else on the uniform completely. So, still, at least the HGB logo is a little smaller than that Frost one. It's pretty huge. It's just, like, it's too much. It's just, like, and then... You made the point earlier about how it kind of looks like a U, and I'm not sure, like...
Just a teal U.
Yeah, I think if you're going to go with, like, the belt line and stripe that, great, and then, you know, do something else. But when you do, you know, like, lines going in different directions like that, to me it just throws it off and reminds me of one of the NBA teams that tried to do something similar a few years ago, and it didn't end up looking very good, so... I mean, look, I like it. It's like finally that the Spurs listened to their fans and gave them a Fiesta uniform, but now they're just like saying, okay, what else can we put it on? What else can we use these colors on? And it's just like, so it's going a little nuts, and this version of it's not as good, I don't think.
I really wanted to let your bad tacos joke just sit there and let people just wallow in their misery that their tacos are terrible. And also, how is it that in a professional basketball league, the number is the smallest thing on the front of the jersey? Mike, you and I have covered high school football.
Yes, exactly.
What they've done with the uniforms is terrible, and
terrible.
It took a long time to get those numbers fixed because they were putting silver, light silver numbers on white jerseys. And I'm like, look, this is high school. I can't see that kid with binoculars. How the hell is anyone else supposed to? I just don't. Now they're doing it in the NBA. Like, why?
It makes it really hard to track things like stats and stuff like that. And That's really hard to make out, and I think a lot of people that make uniforms and stuff like that really go for so much flash, and it's just like, it's got to be readable. There's a reason they have a number on them. You know, it's not just there for flash. Like, that number's got to be easily identifiable, especially when you're doing stats and the game moves as fast as it does, and you're not dealing with, like, every team having NBA stars or whatever. And you're not just going to automatically know who it is. You got to be able to track that stuff quick. And so, like, you're right. It's very small. I remember it used to be where it seemed like the team name was small and the was much bigger. And you're right. I remember that game a few years ago. This was Denton Geyer, and they had white and silver. And I was just like, I'm not going to be able to keep stats for this game because of that. It's just like, I'm just going to have to go off of whatever the play-by-play guy says because I won't be able to understand it.
And you got to hope that the play-by-play guy knows what the hell he's talking about, too.
And he's not having the same issues you are.
Jonas, what are your thoughts on the jersey?
Okay, I like the jersey. And we were talking before hopping on here, too, about all potential alternatives, and I don't think that the University of Texas will let you make a city edition that's burnt orange, because that's about all else that Austin has. But when you look at the size of the corporate sponsorships, guys, this is a very unique year, because there's a reason why not all 29 G League teams are represented here in the Gubble, and it's because the organizations had to pay $500,000 in this money grab by the NBA and the G League to have this little Gubble and pay for, because the numbers all came out when Adam Silver and the NBA opened up their books and said, look at what we had to pay just to have the playoffs and the finals. We can't do this for a whole year. And so corporate sponsorships happen. You know, they're like, okay, well, we need money. Fundraise us. And so you turn the jerseys into a NASCAR vehicle, and you run the guys out there with as many stickers as you can slap on the fabric. But I like the colors. They're kind of simple. I think it's a great homage. The whole message from Austin and San Antonio to Austin, speaking specifically of the Spurs, is that this is one region, it's one team, it's one family. And so how are you going to let your older brothers have the Fiesta jerseys, but little brother can't? You know, if you grew up with siblings, you know, the younger sibling also gets that. And they also get preferential treatment because, you know, if you weren't allowed to stay up till 10 o'clock or you had to, you know, eat your vegetables before leaving the table, by the time you get to your younger sibling, your parents don't even care. They're just like, here, have this. And so this kind of feels like a here, have this to Austin. You know, it's just like, okay, yeah, before you guys even whine that you didn't get one, here you go. And it's merch sale. I mean, yeah. I'm not going to, like, the artwork looks clean in terms of what the fans can purchase. It looks clean, but you're right. It doesn't really fit the tone of Austin. And it, in a sense, does water down what they did for the San Antonio Spurs fans. But this is a very brand conscious team. And I think that they recognize that what we do for one, we have to do for both. And now I'm interested to see if other G League affiliates will run city editions in the Gubble.
That's really interesting, too. And, I understand the whole wanting to be one organization, whether it's Austin or San Antonio, but that was the whole point of the name change to the Spurs from the Toros.
Right.
And
right.
I love the Toros.
Exactly. And I love, honestly, I love the logo with the Fiesta colors and the little circle where the Spur is, and I think that if that was permanent, I would be thrilled with that. And we can't kill the G League too much, because the G League always does theme nights for jerseys, and you know, they wear them one time, they auction it off for charity and raise some money, so there's always good behind it. I just don't understand the Fiesta Edition uniform for Austin. I think it could have been done better, at least, if they were going to do it.
Yeah, do something like the MLK jersey. Like, you look at the MLK Day jerseys, and those ones are all done up, you know?
Yep.
And this one's almost the plain black with the stripes on the side.
Yeah.
But you can't lose the corporate sponsorship in there. You can't go too crazy, because you'd lose the corporate sponsorship logo inside that, and they're the ones paying for y'all to be there.
And let's get away from basketball for a minute. I'm a Chelsea supporter, and as thrilled as I was that Nike took over for Adidas, I have questioned Nike's uniform choices with Chelsea. And then the biggest one was when they switched to a new sponsor that was a company called Three, and their logo was literally the number three. And now now the kits have a three on the front. And I'm like, this is the stupidest thing in the world, to have a sponsor that's a number who actually displays their number as the logo. Like, everyone's just wearing a three, and then their actual kit number's on the back, and it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. So
that's fantastic.
This is still better than that, so great job, I guess. I don't know. I just we're nitpicking the jerseys more than I think we're nitpicking the players and the games, but
because how can you? They're 4-0.
This is true. This is true. This is what happens when you get a winning
undefeated
team. we can't root for a loss, so because obviously the Ignite team's undefeated. Delaware plays today too. They're undefeated at 3-0. So as long as they can keep pace with the Ignite team, because the Ignite team is supposed to be everything else that Austin doesn't have, and that's the new generation of the NBA. So, yep, I guess that about does it for this episode, guys.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get nitpicky today, all I'm hoping for out of this Canton Charge game is that the Spurs don't find themselves down and having to come back. Because all of these games have been too close.
Yeah.
A consistent effort would be nice, and I'm sure Coach Nielsen wants to see the same. But, I mean, that's what happens when you have the talent disparity between Trey Jones, Luka, and Luka starting, and then only Robert Woodard coming off the bench.
Yep. And I think, you know, Canton's only 1-2. I think we talked about this right before the bubble. I can't really pinpoint anyone on Canton's roster that is really, I guess, marquee names outside of Malachi Richardson, because I thought he was actually going to be good coming out of college.
Yeah, he's only getting 19 minutes a game right now, too, and they just got smashed in their last game. So
this is now a Canton Charge podcast. Let's nitpick Canton. All right.
So let's hope they take care of this one early.
Well, let's wrap it up because it is noon and I'm already on 2 cups of coffee. So obviously follow us on Twitter. Clark Jonas, M. DeLeon, by John Diaz. Follow Project Spurs. Follow the network. Visit ProjectSpurs.com. On the podcast, the Spurs cast and ours, rate, subscribe, review, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Do the whole shtick because it obviously makes us look even better when you unsubscribe and resubscribe. And that'll do it for this episode of Forever Toros.